Tanya 200. We're up to chapter 44 in the Tanya. But to review just for a moment what we've been learning until now, the question that was being discussed and dealt with is which comes first, love or fear? In a relationship, in a godly relationship, does the fear come first and then the love, or does the love come first and then the fear? Because we find two statements in the Talmud, in the Mishnah, where it says, if there is no fear, there is no love, or there is no wisdom. And then it says, if there is no wisdom, there is no fear. So, which comes first? The Rebbe says that there is a love called the great love. This love comes from above. It is a gift given from heaven. A love that we cannot produce ourselves rationally. It's a gift. It's a reward. And it comes as a reward for having served God properly with fear. So when we produce a complete and total fear of God, a correct fear of God, then we are rewarded by this great love that is given from above. So in this case, obviously, the fear comes first. You first have to have a complete fear in order to arrive at this love. Then there is a love called Ahavas Olam, the eternal love, which is connected to the world. And that is where a person contemplates the true nature of life, the true nature of pleasure, what is the truest of pleasures, the greatest of pleasures, and is moved with a great love and desire to come closer to God. Now there are times when this love, which is the result of one's contemplation and understanding of godliness, there are times when this love will precede the fear, which means he will feel the love before he feels the fear. And that's why a person who is sinful, a person who has been sinful all his life, can and is on occasion moved to serve God and observe his commandments out of a feeling of love. Because when he contemplates the nature of life and comes to the conclusion that God is the ultimate, he of course does not want to lose that. There's a fear of being separated from that. And then there's the love, the desire to get closer to that. Now sometimes he will feel the love before he feels the fear. And that too is a gift. It's a divine intervention that allows the person to get back into the service of God through the love, even though that is not the way that a human being can move himself or herself in the relationship with God. Because as far as our freedom of choice goes, as far as our talent permits, we have to experience the fear first, which means that we have to begin studying the Torah and observing the commandments out of fear of God before we can experience a genuine love for God. But on occasion, the love will present itself before the fear. So, at any rate, whichever way we go, there needs to be a basic fear preceding any kind of love. Now, in chapter 44, the Rebbe says that there are these two categories of love that we've already discussed. That is the great love and the eternal love. Within each of these categories, there are tens of thousands of various degrees and levels, all depending on how well you understand godliness, how naturally you respond to godliness, how deeply you respond to anything at all. There are many, many different variations on these two loves, the one called the great love, which is a love of with pleasure that comes as a gift, and then there's the one that comes through through contemplation. But there are two other kinds of love that are even greater. People who are experts in their field will find variations, will find so many different forms and give it so many different names, because to them, each level, each experience is unique unto itself and deserves its own name and its own title and so on. So if you're not interested in snow, then you have only one word for it. But if snow is your life, then you have 12 words for the different kinds of snow that nobody else notices. Here the Rebbe is talking about the love of God, and he finds so many different kinds, so many different types, and each one has its own name, it's its own experience. A gourmet on divine love. So what are these two other levels of love? One is described in the prophet, in Yechezkel, where it says, I desire you in the night. And the Zohar explains that what does it mean to desire God in the night? The simple meaning is, in the night means when life is lousy. When the world is dark and it's nighttime, and you desire God out of trouble and out of difficulty and so on. But the deeper meaning of it is that this desire, which is literally described as my soul desires you, but on the deeper level, I desire my soul at night. Which means, according to the Zohar, there is a desire that a person has for his very life, for his soul. And as I desire my soul, that's how I desire God. And this, he uses the analogy, a person desires his own soul when a person, for example, goes to sleep, and he desires to awaken the next morning and have his soul back. Or when a person is very weakened and he feels like he's losing his energy, he's losing his soul, he desires it, he longs to have his soul refreshed or restored. So here we're not talking about the quality of life, we're talking about the desire for your soul. The way a person longs for his own soul, that's how we long for God. This doesn't come as a result of contemplation. This doesn't come as a result of anything we think or know about God. This comes from the soul itself. Because the soul is a piece of God, and the soul's life, the soul's being, is godliness, therefore the soul yearns for godliness. In other words, godliness yearns for godliness. Life yearns for life. So this love, which is described as nafshi ivisicha, I desire you as my soul, is a love that one can experience towards God, in that God is our soul, and therefore it is natural, almost inevitable, that a godly soul yearns for God. This is in a sense greater than the other loves, because it is less selfish, more selfless, more pure. And since it comes from the nature of the soul itself, from the godliness of the soul itself, and not from human intelligence, it is therefore a truer love, because human intelligence is fallible. And even this love is not the greatest or the truest. There's an even greater and truer love, and that is the one that is described in the Zohar as the child who loves his parents, his mother and father, more than himself, more than his life, more than his soul, and will therefore do for them at the cost of his own life. Now this love called Nafshi Ivisicha, I love you like my soul, where the person desires to have his soul restored to him, is connected to the night, where he says, I desire you in the night. And the Zohar says that that's what makes a person wake up in the middle of the night and want to study Torah. Because in order to get connected to that which the soul desires, you connect through Torah. Since Torah is God's will and God's wisdom, and God is present in the Torah, so to connect to the Torah, or to connect to God, you do this through the study of Torah. So how does this love express itself? It is the kind of love where you desire your own soul, and God is the soul of your soul, so your soul desires God because it is God. The soul is godly, and so it desires godly, and that makes him wake up in the middle of the night to want to study Torah. And that's why the Zohar says that it is a good habit, it is a proper custom to wake up in the middle of the night or past midnight and to engage in the study of Torah. Because that satisfies, or that feeds, this particular love that the soul has. The other higher level of love is the one of the child who doesn't see his parents as the essence of his life, but puts his life aside in order to serve his parents. He will do what the parents need, even at the expense and the cost of his own soul. He will sacrifice what is beneficial to his soul in order to do what is good for the parents, even in the physical. So he will do for the parents a physical favor at the expense of his own soul. There's a story in the Midrash about one of the sages whose father was weak and ill in bed. And his father asked him for a drink, to get him a drink of water. So he went to get the water, and by the time he came with the water to his father's bed, his father had fallen asleep. So out of respect for his father, he remained standing by the bedside with the glass of water in case the father should wake up and want his drink. And the father slept for over an hour, and he stood there and waited, which means that he could have been doing something much holier. He could have been studying Torah, he could have been praying, he could have been contemplating God's greatness, and perhaps he was doing that too. But not as well or as thoroughly as he could have had been sitting by his own desk or in his own room and not standing there with a glass of water. So essentially, he was sacrificing his spiritual life, he was sacrificing his soul, or what is most beneficial to his soul, he was sacrificing that for his father's physical thirst, to give his father a simple drink of water. And so we have that kind of love within us also for God, where the soul doesn't want to do what satisfies itself. The soul is not looking to connect to its origin and to its source and be united with the source of all life and so on. It puts its life aside in order to do for God. So it will do a physical mitzvah that it doesn't understand and that is not inspiring. But if this is what God wants, he does this rather than pursue what is best for his own soul. And that too is a natural love. It does not come from contemplation. It comes from the hidden love that we all inherit, that we have by nature, that can't be produced by human effort. And so it is greater than the other two loves, the great love and the eternal love. Now this love of the child to the parent, where he puts his own life, even the life of his soul, aside for his parent, this is a description in the Zohar of the love that Moses had for God. Now, although the Rebbe says, who could be so arrogant and presumptuous as to believe that they are capable of even approaching the kind of love that Moses had for God? Who could possibly think that they were capable of repeating or experiencing that kind of love? Obviously nobody. We are certainly not capable of that kind of love. But since this love does come natural and is inherent in the soul, we need only to reveal it. We need only to bring it out, to make it active, so that the love be a burning love rather than a factual love. So since what's missing is only the revelation or the activation of this love, but it is true to the nature of our soul, which means that the soul does want God in this fashion. The soul does feel connected to God in this fashion. It's just that we are not connected to our soul. So we need to work very hard to reveal, to clear the way for the soul to be able to express this love that it inherently feels and experiences. So even if we can't clear the way, and even if we can't activate the love truly, completely, totally, properly, because we're not Moses, yet everyone should make an attempt to match in his thinking and in his feelings the love that the soul has in its very core and its very essence. And although we can't complete the project, we are told, and we learned earlier in Tanya, that every good intention God connects to the deed, which means that the act that we're going to fulfill, perform, the act of the mitzvah, does express that kind of love. Meaning to say, if I were experiencing in my mind and in my heart, if I was experiencing this love of a child who loves his parent more than himself, what would I do? In fact, what did Moshe do? Moshe experienced this kind of love, and he experienced it fully and completely without any resistance. What did he do? How did such a love find expression? What could you possibly do that would express such a love? The answer is the commandments, the mitzvahs, the study of Torah. Keeping God's commandment. In other words, the mitzvah, the commandment, is significant enough to God that it satisfies and fulfills, satiates, this kind of love where you want to do for your parent more than you care about your own life. So now, the average person who is not Moshe can do the same mitzvah. And this mitzvah satisfies this love. It matches the love. It's not like if I loved God with all that intensity, I would want to do something other than his mitzvahs. There is nothing other. This is the outlet, this is the channel into which we channel the deepest and highest love. So, on the one hand, we have that love within our soul. We just can't access it. On the other hand, the act of the mitzvah which we are performing is the expression that the soul would want or would pursue if I allowed it, if I could access it. So I have the love inside of me, and that's called the good intention, and I have the action. I am doing what that love would demand if I could feel it completely. And so I have the origin and I have the result, and I'm missing some piece in the middle. I'm missing some kind of a connection. And that's why it says, a good intention God connects to the deed. In other words, I have the good intention and I have the deed. I just don't have the connection. So God makes that connection. So even though I won't experience, I won't access this love in my heart and in my mind, but if I'm aware of it, if I'm conscious of it, and then act accordingly and do the mitzvah, then even that love finds some amount of fulfillment. I'm nurturing even that part of the soul in my performance of the mitzvah, because that's what the soul would demand, does demand, even though I'm not feeling it or I'm not making the connection emotionally. So this higher level of love, which needs only to be revealed, is available, is close to every person to express in his heart and his mouth and in his behavior. When we get into the habit of thinking this way, of recognizing, of remembering that this is the nature of my soul, that there is a love in the soul that transcends the soul itself. The soul doesn't want itself. It wants its Father in heaven. And it wants to do the simplest task for its Father in heaven more than it wants its own existence or that which is meaningful and relevant to a soul. Knowing that this is the nature of my soul, knowing that this is what's going on inside of me, and doing the mitzvah in response to that awareness becomes a habit, can become a habit, and habit becomes second nature. So although this is not my truest nature in terms of my conscious emotions, but it becomes second nature, and that too is absolutely valid, because the love is true and the mitzvah is true. And if I get into that habit, God will make the connection between the truth of the soul and the truth of the action of the mitzvah. Now, although these two loves are inherited and they are natural to our soul, and it brings with it also a certain amount of fear because we don't want to lose that connection, it is still necessary to make some effort to experience this love in our heart on a conscious level. If the love is natural, and the love is inherited, and the love is true and greater than any love that I could produce on my own, what is the need and what is the importance of using my intelligence and my freedom of choice to try to arouse this love or to reveal this love and activate it in the conscious part of my heart? Why not be content with the truth of the fact? It is there, I will do the mitzvah, and it is greater, truer, more pure than anything I could possibly produce through my own bumbling efforts. So for this, the Rebbe says that there is a certain quality to the love that comes from the fact that I'm trying. So that even if I am naturally gifted and I am born with a great love for God, which makes it a truer love and a purer love, but there's a quality still missing. In addition to the love being the truest, the most real, the most genuine, and the most pure, there is also a need to make the love intense. And the intensity comes through effort. It can't come without effort. And although the effort kind of muddies the waters, because here the love was pure and clean, coming from above, inherited, untouched, and when I start to make efforts and I start to try to intensify or activate the love or reveal the love, then I'm starting to muddy it with my own shtick and with my own imperfections. Yet, the fact that I'm trying, the fact that I'm engaged in activating this love, adds a valuable dimension to the love itself. And that is the intensity. Because anything that comes easily or naturally doesn't have intensity. It's the struggle. It's the obstacle that needs to be overcome that intensifies the emotion. And so even though we are in awe of this natural love, which is available to everyone, it is close to you in your heart and in your mouth to do, not only easy for Moshe or for Moses, it is available to everyone, not by virtue of our intelligence, but by virtue of our inheritance. It is given from above, and it is awesomely pure and true and genuine. There's still a need for human effort. There's still a need to make our feeble attempts, our imperfect attempts at activating this love or accessing this love, and the struggle itself, recognizing the resistance within ourselves, recognizing the imperfections that we're bringing to this effort, recognizing the distance between what I'm feeling and what I'm really all about, the difference between my conscious state and my unconscious reality. All of this intensifies the desire and intensifies the love, because by the very nature of love, every distance creates intensity. And that's why absence makes the heart grow fonder. You are not more frightened of something when you're away from it, but you do become more loving of something when you're away from it, because the distance itself activates, the conflict activates the love and brings it to the surface.